my favorite neighbors. This is Sis.
This is Squirt.
You have a list, so you start with your list.
Oh, I get to start with my list?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So let me pull up my list, because I was not prepared.
Are you kidding?
I wasn't. Well, like, I thought we'd do something else. I have no idea. But it's okay. Mm-hmm. So, no, the first thing I wanted to talk about was you found these tickets to go see this movie, Attack the Block.
Yep.
So, what did you think of it?
Okay, so... how do I start? So, okay, I had heard about it. It had entered my purview and gone back out the way it came without leaving any trace until you pointed out the poster when we were leaving actually from Glee. And I was like, yeah, I've heard about it, but I didn't really know what it was about. There wasn't anybody in it that I knew or thought about caring about, and I hadn't really heard anything about the story. But you were like, I want to see it. And on the poster, I noticed it said that it was the South by Southwest fan favorite, or like it won some award. And then the tagline seemed fun, which was inner city meets outer space. And the poster just seemed sort of fun. And you were like, it's supposed to be better than Super 8. And so I was like, fine, we'll go see it. My issue, by the way, with Super 8, which is why I didn't see it, was that I felt it was a mix of Cloverfield and Stand By Me, and I just really didn't feel like watching that this summer, which it's fine for those who did, and I'm told it was a very enjoyable movie. I just didn't feel like watching a monster buddy retro movie. I just really kind of didn't care. So we got the tickets, we went to go see, an advanced screening of Attack the Block. One, which has nothing to do with the movie, but in seeing the audience, I think I said this to you, did you wonder where they passed out some of the tickets?
Yeah.
Because I'm like, it just wasn't a typical screener audience. Mm-mm. And it's not derogatory, it just... It was clearly an audience that was not accustomed to preview screenings. Mm-hmm. They showed up late. Mm-hmm. They were unprepared. They, for some reason or other, couldn't read Don't Sit in Press Seats.
Yeah.
First of all, they brought really young children, which I felt for a rated R movie, which it was inappropriate.
Don't judge, though, because I have a friend of mine who started their kids on Freddy Krueger at like 3.
If not for a screening, I wouldn't do it for a screening.
Well, you know.
And then, but anyway, and so there was that. But the other, and then, sorry, one more thing about the theater. They left the lights sort of up.
Yeah.
And I think that was a small part of why I didn't fully engage with the movie.
Mm.
I can't be certain, but like, you know, like, you would jump at certain points, and I didn't, and usually I'm the more scared one.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of it was I could still see.
Uh-huh.
Like, I wasn't, you know how when the lights are off, you sort of tune into the one thing that's
on the film.
Right.
Like, everyone else, the theater could disappear and you wouldn't know.
Right. Yeah. Either I was sitting right under one of the lights or, like, right next to it, but it was enough for me to keep me out of the movie, in addition to the other things that kept me out of the movie. So the movie in and of itself is fine, and that's not, I know that's faint praise and I don't mean to damn it, but it's just a fine movie. It sort of left me kind of cold. I'm not sure I would watch it again ever. The things that make a movie for me, I've said this before, are casting, dialogue, and story. And in those elements, I think really only the story was sort of lacking. Like, the dialogue was fine. It was heavily accented and quite fast. And then it wasn't really turned up that well in the theater, so I definitely missed a few things. By the way, the soundtrack, awesome! But the story in and of itself was just sort of bare. Like, it was an interesting outline, if I can say that, but if you look back on actually what the story is, you're just like, okay, well, that's like less than a paragraph, and you managed to create an entire script around this, bully for you, But the story's not that complex. The cast was great. The casting is really awesome. I think every member of the cast performed their role perfectly. From, you know, the slacker who's just looking to buy some weed to our heroine who, you know, is the victim and then the hero and then the heroine and then the advocate to our main guy who's the punk, but then he sort of grows up a little and has sick things. But all of them, all of that worked out really, really well. It was... And I actually, I will say, I liked how they handled the monsters. I don't know, again, if it was because the lights were up in the theater, but I didn't get scared, but I was happy not being scared. It gave me, it made me, it let me enjoy the movie instead of, like, having my blood pressure rise and the anxiety just pounding in my ears. but, yeah, I ultimately it just sort of left me cold. I don't want to damn the movie because it was fine. It was good effort. And I think that everybody who worked on it should feel pretty good about themselves.
Okay. So let me make sure listeners don't damn the movie. Okay. So as a preface, let's just say Squirt does not like scary movies.
Right.
Any type of the ones that really creep me out are psychological thrillers and things dealing with poltergeists. Any of those type of things where things get possessed, I am not seeing them. I don't care what you do. Next step are slasher films and things where people are caught and chained to stuff. I can watch them, but I need to be quite drunk, very drunk. It's like 4 or 5 shots of tequila in and some scotch. Then there are monster movies, which are like Alien and Predator, where the thing gets killed in the end. I can handle that with quite a few beers. But otherwise, I am not a scary movie person. The first scary movie I ever saw was Scream, and I was 21. Like, I just do not like them. Prefacing that by saying, I like this film. Thank you very much. I thought, I am with you as far as the music. The music was on point. Like, just everything. Besides the fact that the music was good, like, I liked all of the songs, even though I never heard them. It was music for the hypothalamus, just hit you right there. It was on point. But in addition, it was on point for creating the right feeling for the scene. Like, they just did it right. Like, you know, sometimes they do, I don't know, like, they do the eerie, scary feeling a little bit too early, and you're on that level of being really freaked out for like 30 seconds longer than you need to and stuff like that. But this one, the music was driving, pumping, and I feel like that kept the feeling of the movie fun, thereby me not being totally scared. Like, I was scared to the extent where it's fun, like where you're scared on a roller coaster. Like, you're like, oh yay, oh there's a ghost popping out at me, but I'm on a roller coaster, so I'm gonna go fast. And and that's the way I felt. So yeah, I wasn't totally terrified or shocked in the movie. I was pleasantly scared. And I liked that. Like, I because it made it fun.
Yeah.
And it did, and it, but it wasn't pandering. It wasn't like, oh, look at this stupid head of a pumpkin, I'm gonna throw this at you. No, it was scary, like, or they made it feel legitimately scary, but it wasn't scary enough to make me want to go home and sleep with the lights on and hope to God there's not an alien invasion tonight,
right? That's true.
Which is what I did not want to feel. So I thought that it was very well done. I thought the script was fine. I thought the story was fine. The movie was rated R. Like, the movie was rated R, but in my head, like, where I would put it in my film development if I was doing a film curriculum for kids, I'd say in the age of, like, 12 to 16, where you're still having parties / sleepovers for girls, but parties for guys, this would be the movie that you put on, like, to be your scary movie.
Yeah, I can see
and
that.
It's not, and it's fun enough that, like, when you're with a whole bunch of your other friends, you're not gonna be scared, but just gruesome enough to make you feel like you're adult enough to be watching something a little edgier than E.T.
Yeah.
And I thought that was perfect for that. Like, the age of the boys in the movie is the age of the kids that I would screen this movie for. And it was just like, it was like that level of maturity. So it's just one step up from the Goonies. Like, you watched the Goonies when you were 8 and 9. Okay. You figured out, because, I'm sorry, what was, I just forgot his name. Munch? Lurch? What the heck is his name?
Truffle?
No, the big scary monster.
Oh, I don't remember. Good.
But that was scary enough for me in that creepy ship. Mm-hmm. Like, that creeped me out as a kid. But then you get to the point where it ends okay. You're all smiley, happy ending. You're like, okay, fine. So that's my scary movie for 8 and 9. Mm-hmm. This would be my scary movie for 16. My scary movie that, like, if I went over to somebody's house, it's like, ooh, let's watch a scary movie. It's like, I'm not watching Saw.
Right.
I'm not watching Hostel or any of those other stuff. But I would watch Attack the Block. And so that's why I liked it, because it was just that amount of scary, that fun scary. And, yeah, the story's loose, but for that age and feeling, you didn't need a complex story. Mm-hmm. Like, it wasn't the point. The point was, it was kind of like this roller coaster ride with this witty language with these British kids. So it gives you that kind of international feel of like, yeah, I'm just not watching something made in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. Like, this is kind of real hardcore film, but it's not.
Right.
Because it's fun. So
I wonder if, because you bringing that up reminded me of the first sort of edgy film I watched with my friends, which you were there as well, which was Hackers.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder, now see, of course, I say that and I'm immediately like, Hackers is awesome and has a great plot and whatever. But I wonder if this is that sort of movie to some 15-year-old, 16-year-old.
I think it definitely could be. You know, it's not a scary movie. I definitely wouldn't expect the little kids there. Like, I'm with you with the little kids, except, like I said, a friend of mine, like, she started her kids on Jason and Freddy Krueger, like, when they were 3, 4, and 5.
Yeah.
So, like, by the time they were, you know, 8 or 9, it was old hat for them. Mm-hmm. They were like, this is my type of movie. So if they're those kids, I would see them there. But I'm like, I could totally see throwing a back to school party and like this be the movie playing in the background in the family room when I was like 16 or 17.
Yeah.
Like, and that be the one that everybody gets together and watch and be like, oh my God, this is awesome. Wait, what's that? What's that? What'd they say? Like, that type of thing.
Yeah.
Could totally see it. So not because of that, I liked it. I thought it was right on point.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, it's a rated R rating. Like, the only reason why I go unfortunately is because with rated R ratings, these kids aren't going to see it. That's a lie, though, because you were getting rated R movies when, you know, you were well below 17.
Right, all you needed was a note from your parents.
Yeah, but, like, you know, if it was PG-13, more kids, which I feel would be their age, because I do think, like, they use the F word, and it is a little gruesome, mm-hmm. but 13-year-olds can handle that now with all the crap that they see.
Right, of course.
But, so I think it's that age. I think older, like you were saying, like, you were like, I wasn't scared. I thought the plot was kind of thin. It wasn't that. But I was like, yeah, because if it is catered to us, we expect more complexity from our scary movies.
Yeah, maybe that's it.
But, like, I think this is one of the perfect older teen scary movies out there.
Yeah, maybe.
I do.
I mean, it could have been, I guess it could have just been, it could have been a really strong monster caper. But it, for me, as an adult, but it wasn't. And so I think from that, I was a little upset. But I think you're right. I think if this was one of the first sort of clean, scary movies I've ever seen, then I would, I'd be all about it. Or even not clean, but, like, this would be an acceptable scary movie for me as a 16-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hi. Sorry, not that you would notice, but we're back. I was out of coffee and Diet Coke, and so I needed to go get my caffeine. So I have it now. So
essential, of course.
Yeah, so we had to take a little mini hiatus because I was flipping out there.
And it is finally, finally thunderstorming here. So yeah. I'm excited and I'm just semi-distracted looking out the window at the lovely thunderstorm.
Your need for these storms. Okay. So the next thing that I kind of wanted to talk about, or I wanted to get your opinion on. So finally, I got you to go to a roller derby.
It wasn't... had it really been that difficult? I didn't think it had been that difficult.
Yeah. Every time I've gone, why do I have other stuff to do? I can't go.
Well, yeah, but it wasn't that I didn't want to go.
Well, anyway, so I finally got you to experience your roller derby experience. And I wanted to know how you felt about it, what you thought about it. I guess to give everybody in a description or whatnot, a roller derby, in case you don't know.
And have not seen the movie Whip It.
And have not seen the movie Whip It. Is a sport. And I will claim it's a sport because you can play defense. That is my new definition of a sport.
Thanks to
my voice. Yes. But so yes, it's a sport. You can play defense. It's all women on roller skates. And it's a derby. And I should have looked this up. But I feel like if something's a derby, it must go in a circle. Because, like, the horse racing derby is on a track, and, like, car derbies are on a track. So I think it's derby because it's on a track that goes in a circle. I don't know.
Maybe at one time the tracks were called derbies.
Maybe. But they it's a female-led sport, and it's I'm not going to explain all the rules to it, but they roller skate around on a track, and they're on the track. You have offense and defense, and there's a certain way to get points. It's kind of a little bit of, at least when I first started going, it was definitely a, what's what I'm looking for? Counterculture, undercurrent type thing. It wasn't popular. Not a whole lot of people knew about it. Definitely in our area, it was definitely kind of the white rockabilly thing. Lots of tattoos, lots of bouffant haircuts. It still pretty much is, but I mean, it was really, we'd have to go into the country part of our area to find the roller derby rinks, and there were not very many people of color who were playing or who were in the audience. But it's a really fun, kind of exciting time. It's a little bit of a sport, I feel, that doesn't take itself too seriously. Not saying that these girls who or women who play are not intense, serious athletes, but they play with an air of fun about it. It's not like, I feel like football or hockey where it's like I have to make the money and I have to kill you so I can get my name on a shirt, because that's not going to happen for any of these women. They play because they like to play. And so because of that, I think you get the feeling of is that they're out there to have fun and they're not all serious. And they pick these names for themselves that are nicknames that are generally puns, kind of funny, sexy puns. There's this kind of aura of sex to it in general with their costumes and what they wear. Most of it, they're mostly wearing short stuff and little itty bitty things.
Right. Not much else. I think one of the things they're like, they wear helmets and pads and not much else.
Exactly. But like, so I like that. Like they play for the fun. It's not all serious about, you know, I must crush you to win to be the top of my league. It's because they like to skate and play the sport. So that's my intro. But I wanted to know, as a roller derby newbie, how was your roller derby experience?
I liked it. I did like it. Okay, so I had always wanted to go, but it's in my defense, it had always seemed like it was either like a last minute thing, or like a thing that I just couldn't schedule. I couldn't get a time to go. But you had asked me in enough time, and I was like, "Yes, I'm gonna go." And we went up there, and I will say this has nothing to do with the actual roller derby itself, but we had a good time singing along to your newest acquisition on your iPod, which was a list of the movie anthems and the movie songs, and just belting those out and having a grand time. I don't know the last time I heard Wind Beneath My Wings, but that was kind of fun to hear again and talk about. So anyway, we get there, and you were... we got there, we got parked, it was easy, and we actually thought we were going to be late, but we ended up being early, which was actually kind of fun, because it gave us a chance to just sort of sit there and see the audience.
yes, that is part of it, audience watching for the roller derby, yes.
So so we got there, we sat, we were in the foyer for a minute, sitting in line behind I think actually she was probably quite a nice girl. We didn't really talk to her, but she seemed probably the most like me of the audience. Just this girl just waiting in line. And we wandered in a little before they were ready, and, you know, they told us in the Baltimore way, mm-hmm. in the classic Baltimore way, mm-hmm. to get the fuck out. Mm-hmm. And so we did. Mm-hmm. And we sat in the lobby, and I got to see sort of the audience of the roller derby start to line up. Mm-hmm. And the thing with this lobby, which was a benefit and a curse at the same time, is it's very, very small. And so, and it, where we were sitting, the sun was coming just into the lobby and really making it quite hot. So a lot of people would come in and then go back out. So I got to see a sort of changing audience come in and go back out. And there was a lot of ink. There was a lot of sunburnt skin.
Pink people.
Not yet. No, they weren't pink. They'd pass pink. This was like regular pinkish, which becomes like an overall dusty orange. Do you know what I'm saying? Okay. A whole lot of ink. I felt there was a lot of what's the best way to describe this? This sort of trendy counterculture. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Like, everybody had the not cool haircut. And so it sort of becomes the trend to say, hey, I'm not one of the cool kids, except every one of the kids has it. Mm-hmm. Or things of that nature. Mm-hmm. You know, like, they either had the, like, hastily chopped bangs, mm-hmm. or the messy hair, mm-hmm. or they were wearing the shirt in like a bohemian off the shoulder sort of way, except there were 15 of them doing this. And so you're like, you're not as off the chart as you think you are. Mm-hmm. Some people, I guess, would look at this and say, oh, they found their niche. They mm-hmm. found their space. I just really see it as they think they're very different and they're not. Mm-hmm. But maybe that's just me being me. So we, and then of course, I was just dressed in my just sort of jeans and t-shirt, and you were just dressed in your sort of shirt and skirt. And I tweeted some of this, but it was very fun to be there. A lot of gay guys, which I don't really understand, but whatever. More power to them. Mm-hmm. It was a lot of fun. I actually had a really, really good time. I didn't know what to expect, and I knew that I didn't understand the rules. Because I had seen Whip It, and I'd liked Whip It. But when it came time in the actual movie of Whip It for the games, I was always, like, moderately confused. Like, I knew who I was cheering for because I knew the characters that I had been following. Mm-hmm. But I didn't really understand all of why they were allowed to do what they did or why all of that. And so I kept sort of trying to get you to explain the rules to me, and you wouldn't. And so I finally, like, had to, like, read the first part of the program, which explained him a little, but it didn't really help too much. And then you did what I told you I would not be able to handle, which is you tried to explain the rules to me while the game was going on.
But that's all you can do. You can't really, I mean, because it doesn't really make any sense until you see it.
That's fine, but I told you I wouldn't be able to focus mm-hmm. on what you were saying and the action in front of me at the same time. Mm-hmm. And so that was a bit of a problem. I was, of course, watching these people skate around, and they all, see, all is not the right word. Most of them have consistent uniforms, but they don't all have consistent uniforms, which then makes it kind of confusing to figure out who's on what team or even what teams are out there. And then, of course, there's the other drama, which is their uniforms either have nothing to do or very tangential things to do with their names. You know, so I was watching the girls skate around, and I was watching the audience slowly get drunker and drunker. The MCs were irritating as fuck. But the music wasn't very good in the beginning. But I liked it. The first match, we saw a doubleheader. The first match, I picked the team that I was going to cheer for based on the fact that it had two women of color, including one really thick girl, and one of their skaters fell during the intro rounds, which I felt made them the underdogs. However, I did not know at the time that actually they were the reigning champion, but it didn't matter because they fell during the beginning, and then they were like below score all the way through halftime. So I still felt they were the underdogs, and I cheered for them, and I figured it out. And then in the second match, I initially was for the home team because they were our home team and they were really, really good. But then I felt that the refs weren't doing a good job with the other team, and so I decided to cheer for the other team. But ultimately, I really, really, really liked it. I could see myself following a team. I could see myself, like, going to these sort of things, like getting a season pass and just, you know, making this my sport to follow. I mean, and I would probably really like it. I kind of actually wanted, although we left sort of late and you seemed sort of in a rush to leave, I wanted to see what sort of merchandise they had, because I was like, I'll just pick a shirt or I'll just pick like a sticker and put it somewhere and like have that be my thing to be like, yeah, I watch roller derby. What? But we sort of left too early. And it seems like it's like a fairly accessible sport.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know how much the tickets were, but I can't imagine they were more than like $25.
They were cheaper than that.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, not that $25 is something easy to get up off of. And I don't know if I could have gotten up off of it at a previous point in my life, like in high school or in college. But it's not like football where the tickets are $60 a game and
before
you still get nosebleed seats. Right.
All that crap.
Right. Yeah. No, this was good. And it was fun. And. You know, I'm sure there's, like, backstage drama, and if I followed it a little more, I would get a little more. But I had a good time. I didn't really understand all of the calls. I didn't really understand all of the scorekeeping. But, yeah, I liked it. I had a fun time.
I'm glad you did. And I've gone to a fair share. I'm not saying I'm a huge fan of, I mean, I've gone to a ton of games, but I've definitely gone to more roller derby games than I have than any other professional sport.
Mm-hmm.
And I still don't understand all the rules and the rule keeping, but that's kind of not necessarily the point, but you get the overall gist of it.
Yeah.
And it is like, it is a little bit of more accessible, a little bit more homegrown in the sense that, you know, when we were there, they had a raffle for the local bakery.
Yeah.
That was on the thing. They had fundraising for the local leukemia and training. What is it?
Team.
No, team and training to fight leukemia for, like, local people.
Yeah.
There are lots of local shops and vendors that sell their stuff there. So it is. It's a bit of a homegrown sport, and that's what you expect. I mean, yes, there are sponsors, but the sponsors are local.
Yeah,
they're you know, they're not national sponsors.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, I don't know if I'd want it to even get to national. I like the fact now that it is in a specific arena, because when I started going, they were in roller skating rinks, like scattered around the place.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, roller rinks are in like shopping malls sometimes. So it's like you're going to like little strip malls.
Yeah.
You know, to go to things, and it's a little bit shady.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's in, you know, one central localized place, which is great. And so I think that's fantastic. But I don't know if I'd ever want it to get to the level of having a national sponsor of things. It's kind of nice with these little things. And they are scattered all over the place. Like not exhibition team, the national team that they played was from Wisconsin for this match. I've seen them play teams from New Jersey, a couple teams. I think the farthest west I saw a team was Texas.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen them play a team from California or anything like that. But, like, you know, so they do travel, you know, to play. And I think that's part of the fun of it, is a little bit of the homegrownness of it, for me at least, instead of going to, you know, your massive football game where it's like, I don't know if I would, he doesn't play for the Redskins anymore, so I don't care. I don't know if I'd ever see Campbell, like, at my local grocery store.
Yeah.
But these women are teachers.
Yeah.
Nurses.
Yeah.
Doctors. Lawyers. Like,
Students.
Like, people that you see. And so they're accessible because it's like, I know her because she serves me coffee in the morning.
Yeah, pretty much.
You know? And then, boom, there they are.
Or she's on my bus every day.
Yeah.
So
that's the nice, I think that's kind of the nice bit of it. And like I was saying, I think that's kind of the reason why it's such a fun sport to watch, because they have so much fun playing it, because they, like I said, they do it because they love it.
Yeah.
It's not because they're getting paid the big bucks. I don't actually think they get paid anything.
I think there probably are a few professional teams, but very, very few.
Yeah.
Do you think though, this is sort of like, a league of their own? You remember when women's baseball was just starting, it was sort of I don't know what the right term is, but like sort of Dust Bowl baseball, like small stadiums, whatever, whatever. And they would travel by bus and stay in like a home, in a home, and then whatever. But they form partnerships and everything. It's sort of a little like that.
I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what it's like behind the scenes.
Yeah.
But I think, yeah, it is kind of like that. And everybody, you know your friends on the circuit.
I wonder if there's no crying in roller derby. Actually, it really doesn't look like there's no crying in roller derby, because, like, what would be the point?
Yeah.
Everybody gets beat up.
Exactly.
No, the one thing that I did sort of tweet about, and I was kind of teasing, but I'm a little curious. Like, it's clearly, I don't know if I can even say with impunity, a female-dominated sport.
It's a female sport. Only women play.
But there are male coaches. Mm-hmm. And not for nothing, these are, like, the least masculine males I've ever seen in my life. But I just, like, I don't know how that happens. Like, and in Whip It, they gave the male coach a sort of storyline that I vaguely remember. Mm-hmm. And clearly can't even pull right now. But I'm just wondering, like, how these guys get there. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, actually, I'm hoping that they have good intentions, but I actually start to wonder if it's sort of like, okay, so I'm a progressive feminist, in case anyone was ever curious about any of that. Men in feminism. Mm-hmm. Like, there's this trend, and you can spot them a mile away, of guys who come to feminist rallies or come to feminist meetings, and maybe they sort of agree, but they're not activists. But they come to pick up girls, and sometimes they stay because they do get involved and interested and really start to understand the point of it. But then other times they just leave. And I wonder if the coaches are like that. Like, I wonder if, like, initially one of the coaches was like, yeah, I just want to bang, like, two of the girls on the team and, like, roll out. And then he was like, oh, wait, this is actually kind of a fun sport, and I'm going to stay here and do this. But, like, I'm hoping that they actually have purer intentions than that. But I can't be very certain.
I think they do. The teams wouldn't get that far if the coaches didn't actually coach and do
right, the ones that stay. But, yeah. Like, I wonder what their initial motivation was.
I don't know.
So, but, yeah, I really liked it.
Me, I don't know what their motivation is. But, like, one of the people we were watching it with, her fiancé, the male, was like, okay, I want my daughter to play this sport. Like, he's like, I can't play because I'm a guy.
Right.
But I love this sport and I want my daughter to play. So I'm putting it right out there. This is the sport she will play. So I could see him becoming a coach because he wants, like, his daughter to play.
You will play roller derby, yes. Even if she has no balance whatsoever.
Exactly.
Like me. Yep. So, one of the things that, of course, we tweeted was there was a long discussion, which I think probably occurs at every roller derby. And so, what would your roller derby name be? Mm-hmm. And yours will be what?
My roller derby. Well, here's the thing. Okay, so my roller derby name most likely would be Splat.
Okay.
Because see, it's a mind frame. Will I go splat or will you go splat?
Ah, okay.
You don't know. Mm-hmm. And then I'd want my number, because you have your name, which, like, no one ever sees. Mm-hmm. And then your number, which everyone sees.
Right.
And my number would be 355 or Agent 355.
Okay.
In reference to Why the Last Man.
All right. And I did not even attempt to pick a name or a number because there is no way in hell I am ever going to be on a roller derby team. So it's really a moot point. I had a lot of fun. It was crowded enough to make me not wander. But it was almost just a little too crowded for me to be totally, totally comfortable and, like, get enough beers. But other than that, it was fine. Oh, I also had my first Natty Bow, which I had never, ever had before.
What? How did you get? I didn't know that.
I had never had one before because it is the cheapest beer known
it
to
is.
Man.
It's crap.
I know, but that's part of why I had never had it.
Oh.
And, like, I had sent my our friend to go get beer, and I was like, just get me something cheap. And she comes back with that, and I go, not that cheap. But it was already purchased and opened. So I was like, fine, first roller derby, first Natty Bow. Let's try it. Out.
Yep.
So I have had my first Natty Bow. I can thankfully say it will probably be my last Natty Bow, but it was not horrible or awful.
It gave me the most spectacular college beer ever.
It didn't give me, like, a terrible hangover, so I will consider that a plus.
Nice.
But yeah, no, that was, like, I never had Natty Bow before ever.
Okay. Well, as are we done with roller?
Yeah.
As a segue, though, so what I'm saying is that like my name would be Splat and my number would be Agent 355 from Why the Last Man, and I wanted to plug this in there. So I just finished reading Why the Last Man. Once again, I'm late. it came out in 2002. I think the last series ended in 2005. There's 60 quote unquote chapters, which are little books in this novel series.
Now, how little is little? Are they actually like 5 pages or are they like 20 pages?
No, that's why I don't call them little. Yeah, no, they're like, they vary in size, but most of them average, let's say average around 25 pages.
Okay.
So for each chapter. Mm-hmm. Some are longer, some are 30, 40, some are shorter, closer to 20, 15. Okay. But like, so I'd say average 20 to 35 pages.
Okay.
As a preface, so this is my first foray into the graphic novel. I liked comic books as a kid. You know, read the whole Archie, read the Sunday comics. I love Boondocks when they put it all together in a book. But I was never really a graphic novel person. None of those really created full stories that you had characters that you grew with and walked through. Mm-hmm. But with this, the plethora of superhero movies that have come out and the advent of things and all of these shows being based on comic books, but then them changing it and saying, no, these are not based on comic books, these are based on graphic novels. I was like, okay, so graphic novels obviously have some pull. I got to figure out what the deal is with these graphic novels because I don't know anything about them. Mm-hmm. So,
even how they're different from comic books.
Yeah, how they were different from comic books, exactly. Like, so after doing a little bit of research and talking to a few people, people were like, okay, if you want to read like a good graphic novel, because like, I didn't want to start with the crap and be like, these are all crap. Like, the closest graphic novel that would be considered classic literature for graphic novels, people were like, try Why the Last Man. And I was like, okay, this is the one I'm going to try to be my literature, you know, well done graphic novel. And so I did my research on it, and I was like, yay, number one, because this is me and the feminist, the penciler is a female for it. The writer, the author is Brian Vaughn, who is male, but he was one of the authors for Lost.
Okay.
I think he helped write Lost or Heroes. I'm pretty sure it's Lost. Okay. One of the two. And in the penciler was this woman, Pia, and I was like, yay, it's a woman. So I was like, okay, I like it already. Then the concept of the book is that there in 2002, there's a plague that happens across the world and all of the men die. Every single man just drops dead where they are. It's not like they disappear, like they just start hemorrhaging blood and die. And so, you know, cars crash, planes fall out of the sky, you know, people just, whatever's going on, computers go down, like it's just whatever they were doing, they die. Except for this one kid, Yorick. And so, and it's kind of a play, his name is Yorick, and Y is the male chromosome, so he is Y the Last Man, and it's him and his monkey, and that's the other thing too, all male species, so all male cows, all male fish, like every male, anything with a Y chromosome dies.
Now, wait, I have a question. Do they address, like, the disposal of these now carcasses?
Yes! Okay. See, that's the thing. It's like, not a thing, is that because, it's one of those things that because it's a novel, they are able to do this because it's 60 chapters, 60, 30 or so page chapters, installments. So it's pretty decent, substantial amount of room and space to write. They do flesh out all these parts of the story.
Okay.
So they do, they do kind of discuss as to how these bodies get disposed of. And at one point you meet a character. One of the things they do is right when it happens, they talk about, they list the statistics of all of the things that have been affected drastically. Like the United States military, something like 90% of the United States military is gone. And you're like, dude, only 10% of the military is female? And then they were like, something like 60% of Congress gone. You know, president of the United States gone. Tractor truck trailer drivers, something like 99% gone. 95% of the Fortune 500 company CEO heads gone. And you realize like how crazy it is that it's so male dominated. And then, and like, and you're kind of like, what are we doing as women? Like, why are we not here better? And so they, and they do a little bit of a discussion on that, but they do do a story where there's this woman who used to be a supermodel and now she drives a garbage truck and picks up dead bodies. And people pay her for the bodies. Like, you get paid when you deliver the bodies to a dump site, like you would deliver glass cans, etc. But that's, you know, that's what she does, and there are lots of, like, the way the story's written, it's very well done, and I feel very well thought out, you know, because there are lots of tendrils, mm-hmm. completely international. So, like, you know, when it starts, it happens in New York, mm-hmm. like where we are viewing it, but then it also happens in Israel. There's in Australia, like you go all over the world, because unlike, you know, in the past, everything happens in the United States.
Right. Right.
For lots of movies, you're like, there's other parts of the world. And so they continue the storyline all through it. And there are lots of intertwining bits to it. But pretty much the main characters you meet, which is why I picked 355, is so there's this guy, York, who's the last man standing. And there's this agent 355, who's like a super secret agent.
Okay.
And she's kicks butt, like, okay. She's a CIA agent, and this kid York is kind of like the most effeminate guy you could ever. He's not a masculine man at all.
Is he effeminate because he's whiny?
A little. And he's weak. I mean, he's just kind of a dork.
Well,
you know,
I would, okay.
And he's not really effeminate. No, he's just a big
he's
dork.
Useless.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's the typical kind of spoiled, raised, white guy, mm-hmm. that you have in the U.S. You know, he's like, he's never really had to do any hard manual labor. Mm. Not his fault. He hasn't mm-hmm. needed to. So there's mm-hmm. there's no need. And so he's perfectly comfortable drinking his mocha lattes and playing his video game. He's a magician escape artist. So,
oh my God, okay.
Like, yeah, and they add that into the plot, and it's part of, like, his deal. But, like, he's not a fighter. He's not even a really brave guy, mm-hmm. you know? I mean, he's just kind of your normal average Joe that you would expect on the street. Mm-hmm. And the Agent 355, she is, like, the male. Like, mm-hmm. she kicks butt. She's very smart, witty, you know, kind of right there. A little bit cold,
okay.
but, you know, she's an agent. And then we meet this doctor, this geneticist, and her name is Dr. Man.
Okay.
Yeah, it's funny, right? Mm-hmm. And so there are lots of puns like that. But, like, we meet this geneticist, and pretty much the story, those are our focusing of our main characters. Mm-hmm. And they're process is, like, they're all trying to figure out why he's still living, mm-hmm. this one guy and his monkey, mm-hmm. and in addition to how they could then possibly use his DNA or whatever is different about him to help bring back the male population.
Okay.
Because everybody realizes that things will happen. Like, they're talking about how it goes on for the book takes place over the course of about 5 years,
mm-hmm.
so, like, about 2 years in, all the rats die. Because there are no male rats, and rats only live 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, they're like, you know, we have to find a way to repopulate, or else, you know, all of our food is going to die, mm-hmm. et cetera, because we can't make new cows or new fish.
Right.
So that's kind of the process. They realize that, and they go on this journey. But there are all these different, you meet all of these different characters. There's a whole, they deal with the survivor guilt for women.
Okay.
Like you know, why did I live and my husband die?
Mm-hmm.
They deal with the lust, like women, you know, having a sex drive and
right.
like, what do you do?
Right.
No men. There's a set of women who are completely anti-male and mm-hmm. and defend against everything with the patriarchy. Mm. They have a whole religion discussion.
Okay.
And I thought it was a very well done book about that through this killing of men, it shines a mirror on our society.
Okay.
And it is American lens, mm-hmm. but it's a global mirror. They really don't go into the hearts of Africa and, like, Muslim countries, I feel, kind of. They glaze on it where men are really, really patriarchally dominated, and what do women do here?
Right.
I mean, they talk about it for a second,
mm-hmm.
but they don't spend a whole lot of time. But it's kind of like, yeah, like, let's shine a light on how ridiculous our society is, like, that this can happen, but also how do we women view men? Because it is the other half, because part of what makes you a woman, a little bit of the yin and the yang, is how you react to men.
Right.
Regardless of if you're gay or straight, like, mm-hmm. men exist. Thereby, there is a reaction to how you live your life based on the fact that there is this other genetic species.
Mm-hmm.
If that is gone,
mm-hmm.
how you live your life changes.
Yes.
Regardless of sex. Mm-hmm. And so it was really kind of interesting. And they layer it. They put it, you know, kind of all together. They deal with outer space. They're a bunch of cosmonauts.
Okay.
That, like, come back to Earth. And
then immediately die?
Actually, yes. Okay. But we don't know if it's from the virus or not. There's a little bit of a fiasco as far as that goes.
Okay.
But so I thought it was a very well done, well told story, and the characters grow and develop. I don't know. So as far as storytelling goes, I was intrigued and I like it. And you know, I'd read it again. Mm-hmm. And I personally think like. I think it was 10th grade when we read Animal Farm and Utopia.
Yeah.
I feel like this book should go right with it.
Okay.
Because it fits with, like, discussing how you build your society.
Interesting.
And like, building that social hierarchy. And because we had that whole discussion about governments. And mm-hmm. I totally, because those are the ones that you remember. And I was like, this would have fit right in with, okay, so you build your utopia, make it a women-dominated society with no men. What does it look like?
Right. What does that mean?
Yeah. And yeah. have that philosophical mm-hmm. discussion. Mm-hmm. And that book, this book, does. Well, not this book, this graphic novel series does.
Yes.
So I thought I was pleasantly surprised and impressed with how much I liked this book, and I liked these characters and got to know them. I would read it on the metro, and I really think there were certain points where I was like, oh, no! and I'm like, okay, I'm in a public place. Like, I can't do this, but like, I got attached to these characters, and when things would happen, I would flip out. I don't know anything. I know when I was reading some of the reviews for it, people were talking about how they thought that the penciling and the graphic was elementary and rudimentary, and the coloring wasn't that good. I don't know anything about that. Mm-hmm. Like, I thought that it was fine. I don't, like, I feel like maybe stuff like that is more important in, like, Batman comic books, mm-hmm. where, like, it's all about
his shades of gray
and his costume and stuff. I, you know, it didn't take away from me, but maybe it's one of those things where I haven't seen, like, if you haven't seen a really good painting, you don't know you're looking at a bad painting.
Right.
So, like, as far as story goes, I thought the story was great. I thought the penciling was perfectly fine. Maybe if I'd seen another book that has spectacular penciling, then I'd be like, oh, well, then this one wasn't too good. But,
right.
you know, all of that, it didn't take away. It added to the story for me. It's definitely a different way of reading.
Mm-hmm.
The books and I'm so glad that like I read it late though, because it would have really ticked me off to have to wait for different chapters to come out monthly. I could just go to Barnes & Noble and buy them all. So that was nice. So that's my thing. I'm on the graphic novel bandwagon, I think they're legitimate pieces of literature, legitimate new ways to tell stories.
Okay.
And there are some really great stories coming out of it. And in all fairness, I don't know if this story would have been as compelling only written. I think it was possibly necessary to have it in this graphic novel because it added to the science fiction of it. Because,
mm-hmm.
Reading 1984, which is supposed to be sci-fi, mm-hmm. it like you lose some of it, I feel, but the way novels are drawn and the colors, the angles that they do, the photographs, it kind of allows you to take that leap of like, yes, some weird genetic disease hit,
yeah.
instead of just imagining it, because it's like this is a cartoon,
yeah.
you know. So I understand cartoons are fictional, and this is where it goes.
So, two questions.
Mm-hmm.
One, have you picked your next book? And then two, after finishing Why the Last Man, do you now understand what the distinction is between a comic book and a graphic novel? Or are you still sort of in the stage where I am, where I think it's an arbitrary decision based on the story?
No, I haven't picked the next book. I really haven't been looking. My problem with it, in all fairness, for picking the next book, because Amazon does this. I love this. No, love/hate this with Amazon. You look and order one thing, and the next thing you know, everything's in your suggested queue.
Yeah.
So, like, they suggested all these books for me,
mm-hmm.
but it's, like, Ex Machina, I guess, is the other one that this guy wrote, and, like, The Walking Dead, and all. They're really gruesome.
Okay.
And kind of gross, and mm-hmm. and not really my cup of tea.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm not a zombie person.
Mm-hmm.
Like, The Walking Dead is one that Amazon constantly comes up and is like, you need to
mm-hmm.
read this book. And I was like, I don't want to read about zombies. And then lots of other ones are like, you know, sci-fi or people killing you. And the pictures that they have coming out of them are like blood and gore and all this stuff. And it's not my my thing. Mm-hmm. So I haven't picked another one yet simply because I haven't found one with a subject matter that really appeals to me. Mm. Like, Why the Last Man appealed to me because it was that type of subject matter. And I get it that they write them for guys and this is what they like, war and all this type of stuff. It's just not my thing.
Right.
I do notice a difference. I don't know if I'd be able to articulate it, but I definitely feel there's a difference between me reading Why the Last Man and reading, like, an installment of the Batman series.
Okay.
Like, I definitely think, you know, the Batman series goes through... I'm picking on Batman. I shouldn't, but I just am. Mm-hmm. The way I remember it, and maybe it's changed, is, like, you know, Batman is there. There's a villain that he's fighting. It may take two or three... comic books for him to defeat him, but it's not a novel. Uh-huh. Like, this one really had a story with a beginning, middle, and end. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like... I feel like Batman and stuff is more about the character, and this was really more about the story. Mm-hmm. And I don't think, like, you know, Batman's been around for, what, 30, 40, 50 years?
Something like that.
And, like, you can't... Yorick can't be around for 50 years.
Right.
Like, he is human and will die. They continue to reinvent Batman, and Batman is human, but they continue to reinvent him because it's about the character.
Okay.
But this is really a story mm-hmm. about these people in this quote-unquote dystopia, or for some people, a utopia, right. a world without men.
Right.
And so I can see the difference. It's like they're telling a story like a novel.
Mm. If you want to continue any of the conversations that we've started here, you can follow us at My Fave Neighbors on Twitter or through our blog, which is myfavoriteneighbors.blogspot.com. This is Sis.
And this is Squirt.
Thanks for stopping by. You'll know us when you see us.